Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, we want to lead off today in the show and talk about the fiscal stimulus bills. Nearly in a week, of course, Biden signed off on what's called the Infrastructure Bill or the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act. So that cow is in the barn. And then, of course, today, the U.S. House of Representatives voted on the second bill, the Build Back Better, a.k.a. Reconciliation Bill, whatever you want to call it, and threw that proposal over to the Senate. That's still a work in progress. We'll talk about that a little bit. But now that we've got the infrastructure bill all finished, we should talk about that because, you know, it's really being touted and the spin is in that this is a big deal and it's going to have a big impact on the economy and it's going to create a lot of jobs and, you know, this is part of the recovery, et cetera, et cetera. Not true. We'll take that apart and see what really is in it and what it really represents. As the Brookings Institution said, it's not really a stimulus bill. It's about how you reorganize paying for programs, fiscal programs, infrastructure programs. Okay, so we'll return to that. I also want to talk a little bit about what's going on with the new COVID fifth wave that's really sweeping in Europe and which they're preparing for here in the winter as well. Some comments, follow-up comments on inflation that we talked about last week and labor force participation. And then the U.S.-Mexico-Canada meetings, and then finish up with some comments on recent labor news. You know, we had the settlement for the John Deere agricultural implement strike here, UAW, earlier this week. What's the significance of that? And then the other vote, which is not on a contract, but maybe even more important in the Deere settlement, which is the Teamsters' internal vote on selecting its new leadership going into, you know, the rest of this decade. Okay, so let's jump back and start with looking at this infrastructure bill that was just passed here, and what's in it? Well, they keep saying, oh, $1.2 trillion of infrastructure spending. Well, it's really only $550 billion, as we've been saying all along, and now, of course, when the deal is done, now the media starts clarifying the $1.2 trillion, really only $550 billion of new spending. And by the way, virtually none of that is going to hit the economy here in 2022, according to the Congressional Budget Office and its budgetary effects summary of the infrastructure bill. We'll talk about that. So what's in the $550 billion? Now, that's over 10 years. Keep in mind. 10 years. And you got to understand, these bills that are being passed are called authorization bills. In other words, they authorize a certain level of spending. The actual spending is less. The actual outlays tend to be, in every case, less. So you got to distinguish between what the legislation and, of course, the media, you know, overestimates it and gives you a high estimate when it's actually less. So you got the media misrepresentation. Then you got the authorization, what's on paper in the bills that are passed. But then you have appropriations. In other words, the money that's actually provided in another bill and the actual spending, which is usually reduced because of congressional rules that were established way back in 1985 with the budget and Balanced Budget Act. In other words, there are certain rules about how much you can actually spend. Very arcane rules. I'm not going to get into them. So the actual outlays are far less than what you hear in the media and what they say is in the legislation. And the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, kind of clarifies all that. You know, if you look at the CBO report of this infrastructure bill, actual spending, outlays, discretionary, direct, budget authority versus estimated outlays, it's not even $550 billion. It's less. And in both cases, the infrastructure bill and reconciliation bill, you know, the Biden administration is saying, oh, it's all paid for. It's all paid for. Well, not according to the CBO. You know, the CBO deficits are actually increased for the infrastructure bill by $256 billion. And it might be another $90 billion. I don't know. That's not clear. But certainly $256 billion deficit after all the smoke and mirror revenue-raising measures in the bill. Yeah, okay, so what's actually in the bill? What's part of the $550 billion? And what is the rest composed of that's spending already authorized, you know, on a typical annual basis, you know, every budget ongoing? That's not net new spending. Therefore, that has no real stimulus to the economy, maintains the economy level, whatever that is. But what's the net new? Well, $110 billion for roads and bridges, about $40 billion for bridges. $65 billion for upgrading the electric grid. Rail, freight and passenger, Amtrak, etc., $66 billion. $65 billion for broadband. Water quality, in other words, do something about the lead and the other bad stuff we're drinking, $55 billion. Okay. Climate change protection. Now, it's not really climate investing. That's like helping maintain the infrastructure so it's not, you know, destroyed by climate, by storms, and so forth. Right? Harden the existing infrastructure. Not really climate, but they call it that. Airports and ports. Seaports and airports, $42 billion. Public transit, $39 billion. Environmental cleanup, $21 billion. Yeah, well, that's not really doing much about climate change and climate warming. It just means cleaning up the messes that have already been made by industry. Electric vehicles, $15 billion. Yeah, that you could say that's, you know, that's climate. That amounts to about $5, $6 billion or so to provide electric buses and ferries for schools, electric school buses, and some other transport, and the get the electric charging stations build out started. That's going to be a big problem, you know, the EV, because the different electric cars have different charging connections, their proprietary connections. You know, Tesla has its connections, and Nissan and Chevy and so forth. They're all different. So what are you going to do? Provide three different connectivity solutions here at these EV stations. You know, it's like the old computers. They always try to have their own proprietary devices, you see. That's how businesses try to capture the market, have proprietary connectivity. Well, the auto companies are playing the same game. So I don't know how they're going to solve that EV charging station problem as they start building it out. Maybe that's why they only allocated, you know, $15 billion, actually $7.5 billion for the charging stations to get the whole idea going. I don't know. And then there's, you know, some odds and money for transport safety and something about called connecting communities, $1 billion. That's the new spending, you see. That's all traditional infrastructure, traditional. You know, when this infrastructure bill started, it was called the American Jobs Act way back in last March. It was the second of three measures of government spending that the Biden administration launched. The first was the American Rescue Plan. That was the COVID plan, COVID relief. You know, that was the unemployment insurance and the checks and money, more money for small businesses, grants, and then, you know, some other measures. That was a mitigation bill, American Rescue Plan. The first thing that passed, that was a $1.9 trillion that passed. But that was not really a stimulus. That was to put a floor under the collapse of the economy that was really coming in the first quarter of this year. It staved off the collapse, staved off, you know, a double-dip recession. But it was temporary, and it all dissipated or was prematurely pulled back, you know. Actually, $200 billion of that was never spent, you see, never spent. And the Biden administration is saying, well, we're going to use that unused $200 billion to help pay for the infrastructure bill. They're taking money that was part of the COVID relief, and they're using it here to finance the infrastructure bill, you know, this $1.2 trillion. Yeah, just the thing to keep in mind, right? But that bill was originally the infrastructure called American Jobs Act, envisioned to be $2.3 trillion. Now it's down to $1.2 trillion, only $550 billion new spending, right? Okay, $2.3 trillion of actual new spending was initially envisioned. But what happened was somewhere around March, April, politicians got together because corporate interests and Democratic Party wanted, and some of the Republicans, wanted this traditional infrastructure spending that we've got now here. But they didn't want the human infrastructure spending that was also in the original American Jobs Plan, AKA infrastructure bill. So they took that out. They stripped out all the human infrastructure, you know, the community college, 2 years free, preschool stuff, and elderly care, child care, right? Human infrastructure. They stripped it out of that original bill and they dumped it into a third bill, you know, which is the Build Back Better bill. They took out everything except traditional infrastructure, you see, because they knew they could get the infrastructure traditional passed. So they set up the infrastructure bill to be able to get it more easily passed. At the same time, they made the Build Back Better bill more difficult to pass. That was the deal in the spring with Bernie Sanders and the progressives. And part of that deal was Bernie accepted that with the understanding that the two bills, the traditional infrastructure and the Build Back Better social human infrastructure, would be passed at the same time, you see, because they were losing all the leverage by breaking out the two bills and breaking out the human infrastructure from the traditional infrastructure. If they had kept the human infrastructure measures in the original infrastructure bill, you know, we would have gotten some stimulus out of it. and some social spending out of it. But in order to pass infrastructure more easily and get Republican support and the support of Manchin and Sinema, Democrats in the Senate, they stripped it out. Okay. You got to understand the background to these negotiations and how the progressives have been outmaneuvered at every step. And the first outmaneuver was to get Sanders and the progressives in the House to agree to do that, to strip out the human infrastructure from the traditional infrastructure last March. And that's how we got the infrastructure bill that was passed by the Senate. I mean, the Senate, yeah, and the House. And then signed by Biden last Monday. That's the $550 billion of new spending that I just enumerated here. Well, what's the other $700? Because they say it's a $1.2 trillion. Well, it's authorizations on highway trust fund and stuff that typically gets continued, you know, already pre-authorized before all these negotiations going on about the new infrastructure spending, the $550 billion, and the Build Back Better. See, $700 billion was already not an issue. And they threw it in the pot with the $550 billion to make it look bigger. That's how you get to $1.2 trillion. Make it look bigger, right? But, you know, there's even a smoke and mirror game playing here with the $700 billion because that's only really funded in half of the $700 billion through 2026. And according to the Congressional Budget Office, you know, they're going to have to, in 2025-26, authorize another $80 billion a year for the next 5 years, 26 to 31, for this traditional highway spending. So, you know, that's really not there. It's not really 700, it's really $362 billion on top of the $550 billion. So, you know, it's really like $900 billion, not 800 billion something, not $1.2 trillion. Will they, 5 years from now, pass additional money for continuing traditional highway trust fund and stuff? Yeah, probably will. You know? But this is part of the smoke and mirrors and games being played on how this thing is paid for and what's really in it. So what's really in it is $550 billion for those items I indicated and half of the Highway Trust Fund traditional pre-authorized spending. Now, Biden has said, this bill is paid for. Originally, the American Jobs Plan was going to be paid for by tax hikes on corporations and the rich, you know. What are some of the tax hikes that were originally envisioned? That's when it cost $2.3 trillion, right? No. But what are some of the tax hikes? Well, if you look at the Tax Foundation estimates, right, of the $2.3 trillion, going back, of course, $953 billion was going to be paid for by raising the corporate income tax from 21% now to 28%. Another $313 billion, well, actually $531 billion, was raising what's called the GILTI, G-I-L-T-I, tax. This is the tax of U.S. multinational corporations offshore, GILTI, right? They pay 10.5% now. That's their rate on offshore. You know, keep in mind, what, they're paying 10.5% on their offshore taxes? They're paying 21% onshore? Now, don't you think that's an incentive for corporations to continue to move the operations offshore? Manufacturing? Yeah, of course it is, right? They pay half of the 21%, 10.5%. That was the Trump tax cut, right? Well, you know, the original infrastructure bill last March proposed to raise that 10.5% to 21%. And that would have brought in another $313 billion. So corporate tax rate to 28%, $953 billion. Guilty tax rate raised, that's $313 billion. And tightening the rules on guilty, in other words, U.S. corporations under Trump tax cuts could figure out how to pay this 10.5% across all the countries in which they were doing business. And that's how they would get it down even lower. Well, you know, the original proposal of Biden administration was to change those rules. So, you know, the tax rate would have to be calculated country by country. That was 21% country by country. That would have made them pay $218 billion more. So there's over $500 billion on tax hikes on U.S. multinational corporations in the original infrastructure bill last March, on top of the $953 billion raising the corporate tax. Right? And there was some other measures there, tax hikes on investors, on foreign intangible income deduction, and 15% minimum tax on the book value of corporations with over $2 billion in net income a year. So the original American Jobs Plan, a.k.a. Infrastructure Bill, $2.3 trillion last March, had in it $1.68 trillion of tax hikes on corporations and individuals. It's all gone. They stripped all of that out of the infrastructure bill. All of that. In other words, we're not taking back any of the Trump tax cuts to pay for any of this stuff, even infrastructure, let alone human infrastructure, Build Back Better, social programs. No, no, no. We don't want to pay anything. We. Who's we? Oh, the corporate wing of the Democratic Party and their two shills, Manchin and Sinema. And, of course, all of the Republicans, right? Yeah. So the point is, all the tax hike proposals were stripped out of the infrastructure bill last March. And what we got passed here and signed last Monday is $550 billion paid for with smoke and mirrors. Well, what smoke and mirrors are we talking about? Well, here's some of the measures here, the lion's share of the measures, right? Spectrum sales. Selling, the government will sell 5G wireless spectrum to private interests, you know, the AT&Ts and T-Mobiles and those guys, right? How much? Well, they say it's $87 billion. Nah. Other estimates are $20 billion at most. Oh, another way that they're going to pay for the $550 billion is through selling the government's strategic oil petroleum reserve. Well, that's not going to happen either. Look, we got gas prices going through the roof, and Biden still won't sell any of the strategic petroleum reserve. So that's a big question mark, whether that actually raises any revenue. Then there is the unemployment insurance savings. In other words, they cut off unemployment insurance benefits in a couple dozen states here back in June and saved the money that was allocated in the COVID relief bill, the American Rescue Plan, the first bill, the $1.9 trillion. You know, they save $53 billion. And they say, oh, we're going to use that, right, to pay for the infrastructure bill for the $550 billion, along with the oil reserves, strategic oil reserves, spectrum sales, and then another $50 billion in revenue would be raised by putting on hold prescription drug rebates that were supposed to occur for Medicare recipients. Part D, prescription drugs, $51 billion. This is money that the middlemen have been keeping in the CVSs and so forth, right? The distributors ripping off Medicare prescription drugs. Well, that was supposed to be refunded. That was in, I think that was in the COVID relief bill. But that savings now is not going to take effect. It's going to be diverted to pay for the infrastructure bill. And then there's other programs from the American Rescue Plan, COVID relief, rescission, they call it. They call these rescissions, right? They're going to take back that money. So what they're doing is moving the money around. You see, they're taking the money from what was authorized to be spent for COVID relief, the $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan. They're moving that money to pay for the lion's share of the $550 billion actual new spending on the latest version of the infrastructure bill. Now, and of course, then we got phony spectrum sales, strategic oil reserves, and so forth. Right? That's how they pay for most of this $550. No tax hikes. None of those tax hikes I talked about, you know, corporate tax rate, GILTI rate, right? Foreign intangible income deduction, 15% minimum book tax. None of that is in the infrastructure bill. Doesn't pay for it. Well, you know, what this shows is that all this bargaining for months has been about making sure you don't tax the corporations and the rich to pay for any of this stuff. No, you don't tax them at all. You know, there's thousands of new corporate lobbyists been running around Washington here, lobbying the hell out of the mansions and cinemas and all the rest. No, no, don't reverse the Trump tax cuts. No, no, no. We want to keep that. Yeah, that's what it's all about, as I've said many times. And, you know, the infrastructure bill accommodated all that. No tax hikes there, you know, just smoke and mirrors, moving the money around from the previous COVID relief bill, spectrum sales, et cetera, to pay for it. But even that doesn't pay for it, you see. Even that doesn't make it the Congressional Budget Office. And its reports, its estimates, shows that the infrastructure bill is still going to cost over 10 years $256 billion in deficits. It's not all paid for. It would have been if we had those tax hikes in it, but we don't. We got smoke and mirrors moving the money around, which doesn't pay for it either, totally. So half of it is deficits. Going to have to be paid with debt. It's not paid for, in other words. Oh, but Joe Manchin isn't complaining about that bill not being paid for, is it? And he knows it's not paid for. You know? He's only complaining about not paying for the reconciliation, Build Back Better bill. In other words, he helps engineer, he was the key, to engineer the infrastructure bill. And now act, which isn't paid for. And at the same time, he's complaining about not paying for the Build Back Better bill. Build Back Better is the third bill that would just pass the House, you know. Estimates of which, you know, range from Bloomberg News says it's $1.64 trillion. You know, New York Times and others say $2 trillion, $1.85 trillion. The media doesn't have any idea what the actual number is, the mainstream media. You know, and then if you try to find out about these bills by going online and reading the Washington Post or CNN or any of these surveys, they don't tell you much about it at all. They don't know what the hell, or they're obfuscating it on purpose, you know. You want to find out what's in it? Well, you're going to have to read the 2,700 pages of the legislation, you know, that describes the Infrastructure Act that was just signed by Biden earlier in the week. And I bet the Build Back Better thing is going to be thousands more pages. Right? I don't think anybody's actually done that analysis. I tried, spent 5 hours. Didn't get very far into the 2,700 pages. But you can pick up bits and pieces from the bits and pieces analyses that have been done and then look at the Congressional Budget Office to to see what they had estimated back in August, which, you know, it's probably changed a little since then, but that's the only thing I've been able to find, official CBO estimates of what's being spent. By the way, in 2022, there's hardly any money being spent out of this Build Back Better, you know. They say $162 billion. I'm looking at the CBO report of August 9th of the infrastructure bill. They say $162 billion spent in 2022, but that is authority, budget authority. Remember what I said? What's authorized is not what actually gets spent. How much is actually going to be spent, according to the CBO August 9th? $14 billion next year. That's it, $14 billion. You know, and then the following year, you know, it's $33 billion. And it ramps up, you know, 2026, 27, 28 is when the real spending actually hits, and then it declines. And what you got is a budget authority over the 10 years of $446 billion. And estimated outlays of $415 billion, not the $550 billion. Now, there may be a subsequent revision to this, but this is all I could come up with to try to find out, you know, what is actually being spent, how much of it is being spent, how much of it is tax revenue driven, which is none, and how much it is smoke and mirrors funding, which I went over, right? Okay, and we got a $250 billion deficit because it's not being paid for. It's smoke and mirrors. And they knew it, and they know it all along. And so did Manchin. You know, yet he plays this phony game about, oh, you know, we can't afford any tax hikes for any of this. Well, he can't because his corporate buddies lobby the hell out of him. And by the way, you know, there's virtually no climate change mitigation in the infrastructure bill. You know, I read down earlier the actual items, and really all you got is electric vehicles and charging stations. That's the only real climate warming mitigation in the infrastructure bill, right? There's environmental spending related, you know, like water quality, right? Improving the water quality and cleaning up the environment. But that's not climate change mitigation. That's not doing anything about CO2 and methane and so forth. By the way, to digress, did you notice in the COP26 meeting there in Glasgow, Scotland, it's a big deal now. They're talking about methane. Methane. Oh, we got to do something about methane, not just CO2. Methane has moved up as a prime objective. Well, I think that's because now they're realizing that methane maybe accelerating the global warming even faster than CO2. Why? Because methane is 80 times more powerful than CO2 in terms of global warming. 80 times. And you know, remember last summer we had 100 plus degrees on the Siberian Arctic? It was 100 degrees, and then in British Columbia, it was 122 degrees, right? I'll tell you what's happening. The tundra is thawing out. The tundra is all methane. It's thawing out. And then, of course, all of these fracking that produces a lot of methane, too. Methane's a big problem, and that's why this thing's running away from them. The CO2 and global warming, and they know it. Okay, but the point here is to get back to the infrastructure bill. There's no real climate investment infrastructure bill. There's $550 billion of climate investment in the Build Back Better bill that probably won't pass, you see. Yeah, 500, that's where it all is. They stripped that out when they stripped out the human infrastructure last March from the $2.3 trillion, right, Jobs Act infrastructure bill. You know, they stripped out the human infrastructure, they stripped out the climate change investment, and they dumped it in this catch-all third bill called Build Back Better, reconciliation, whatever. Clearly, you know, they wanted to pass the infrastructure and maximize this chance of passage at the expense of minimizing the chance of the Build Back Better bill being passed. Okay, and now we got this passage here of the House Build Back Better bill that's being thrown over the transom here to the Senate. And the Senate, led by Manchin and Sinema, I predict is going to cut the hell out of it. If anything passes, it'll be more around $500 billion. It won't pass this year. You know, they talked about trying to pass it in the Senate sometime in December. Well, you know it's not going to pass in December if they say that. You know, maybe next year. Maybe. And if it does pass, it'll be gutted. You know? Maybe there will be a little bit of climate investment, you know, maybe continuing the child care benefit, but not much else. You know, I don't think much else will get in there. Yeah, maybe the preschool, you know, and all that in reduced spending form, right? So we got no stimulus. We got no stimulus, fiscal stimulus from government. And I think that's going to play big in 2022 for the recovery of the economy, because now we got COVID fifth wave, right? The U.S. is rushing to get boosters passed for all adults now, right? Because they know a winter surge is coming. And you only have 59% of the total U.S. population, adults, vaccinated. 59%. That's it. It's not enough to stave off another wave. Just as we're seeing in Austria and Germany, a wave that's the worst they've had since COVID began. And that's why in those countries, they are locking down the unvaccinated. Yeah, it probably will spread to the rest of the European Union as well. The highest rate of infections since February 2020 now occurring in Germany and Austria. Right. What this probably means is that some of these traditional vaccinations like Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca in the UK, Sputnik 5 in Russia, are not as effective as they said they would be for the vaccinated even. But then, you know, you got a third of the people who are unvaccinated and refuse to be vaccinated, you know. Look, what this signifies is that the far-right political forces have captured this vaccination issue, and they're using it to mobilize people to their side. That's what it is. You know, I had someone say, oh, 44 million people in Europe are demonstrating against the vaccinations. 44 million out of, 400 million? That's about 10% of the population. That's about the following of the far-right groups in Europe, 10%. That's what this is. The far-right has captured this issue, and their media, social media and traditional media, is using it to push all kinds of fake information that people who can't understand the difference between correlation and causation fall for. Yeah. That's what's going on. But, you know, the traditional vaccination, vaccines, you know, J&J's, not the mRNA, new stuff, COVID, Pfizer and Moderna, not that. But the traditional stuff is not that effective. So you're getting these breakthrough infections, And it plays into the far right saying, oh, vaccines don't work. Well, you know, the new ones do a lot better. But then you got over 10 million people in this country alone who have damaged immune systems because of illnesses or because the drug companies have been pumping in all this immune suppressant medications here, you know, for skin problems and everything. For some time now, they've been pumping all this in, and they've been depressing the immune system of millions of people. And these are the people who are catching it. And, you know, even if you've been vaccinated, if you got a damaged immune system, the vaccine probably is not all that effective. You know, look at Colin Powell, who died earlier, last month, right? He was fully vaccinated, but he caught COVID and died. Why? Because, he had Parkinson's, I think it was, and his immune system was simply not working. So, you know, the vaccines don't work if your immune system's dead. But all these breakthroughs are examples that the right wing is manipulating and mobilizing around. It's got lots of people convinced that the vaccines don't work. Right. Or what's worse, they cause you other problems. Right. Which there's no evidence of either. The point I'm making is that we've got a COVID-5 fifth wave going on in Europe coming here. That will affect the economy as well here through this winter. Even bigger impact, negative impact on the economy is the inflation that's going on. It's entrenched. Okay, it's not temporary, it's entrenched. It's the result of the structural changes that have occurred in the U.S. and global economy as a result of all these shutdowns and the COVID and the recession. It's fundamentally changed the economy in a number of ways. And, you know, one of the ways, of course, is that we've got this chronic inflation now. Right? And it's much higher than 6%, much higher. That's a lowball estimate, the recent consumer price index, right? And more importantly, now, in my opinion, what we got are inflationary expectations have taken root in the economy. What's inflationary expectations? It's when households, consumers are convinced inflation is going to keep rising and accelerating, and they quickly go out and buy more stuff before the price goes up, cars, houses, whatever, right? At the higher prices, which drives the price even further. The problem is a supply system breakdown, but then you get inflation that's supply-driven initially and inflationary expectations set in, and then you get demand-driven on top of it. Inflationary expectations are very dangerous. They haven't played as big a role since 1980, you know, when they played the big role there under the Reagan administration, which originated with, again, oil prices, you know, with the oil crisis having to do with Iranian hostage taking and everything so forth, right? We got inflationary expectations over 10%. And what did Reagan do? Reagan had the Federal Reserve raise interest rates to almost over double-digit levels, and that caused the big recession. It brought inflation down, but at the cost of households and workers to pay for what was a supply-side problem. Well, we're heading for that as well, I think, because inflationary expectations are now chronic. On top of that, we have in the economy a record trade deficit, $80 billion a month in U.S. trade deficit going on. And that deficit, approaching $1 trillion a year now, detracts from U.S. GDP and growth in its calculations. It becomes a negative, right? So we got entrenched inflation, inflationary expectations. We got a chronic record trade deficit. We got the Federal Reserve is going to raise interest rates sooner rather than later into the face of this. right, which is going to slow the economy. And we got two bills here that really don't stimulate anything. One probably won't pass, you know, Build Back Better. And we got the COVID wave coming, the fifth wave. Well, this is not a scenario that's very positive for the U.S. economy, not for inflation and not for continued economic growth. Right? And it's not just the U.S. economy, it's global. Okay? So, you know, I'm very negative on where the U.S. economy is going to go next year, contrary to all the hype and spin going on. Oh, the recovery is growing and it's accelerating and so forth, right? I'm not that optimistic. Okay. And I didn't mention, but, you know, I did say the deficit in the infrastructure bill is $256 billion. The estimated deficit in the Build Back Better is $160 billion, even though there are tax hikes on corporations and the rich in the Build Back Better bill. You see, they've been stripped out of the infrastructure bill, but they're still there in the Build Back Better bill, but they will be stripped out there too. There's no way you're going to get that Build Back Better bill passed, if it passes, with those tax hikes in it. Manchin, Sinema will make sure they're taken out. And if you take out the tax hikes, you're going to have to slash the hell out of the spending, the $1.64 trillion. That's why I say it's going to come down to about $500 billion if it passes, you see, because they'll take all the tax hikes out of it. And the rest they'll do with smoke and mirrors again, moving the money around from other pots in the government. If it passes, I don't think it, you know, I think the odds are against anything passing, certainly not until next year. If the economy really sags in, you know, first quarter next year, they may pass something. They may pass something because, you know, Biden has to do something about climate change investment. You know, he came back, said he would. You know, infrastructure bill has nothing virtually in it for that. So he's got to come up with something. You know, I find it curious that the Congressional Budget Office has been costing out the Build Back Better bill item by item. Usually they do it all at once, you know, but they've been breaking it all out. I think that's because they've been asked to do that by the administration, because the administration knows if they're going to pass anything from the reconciliation bill, it will be item by item. It won't be the whole bill if anything does get passed. Okay. So, you know, the U.S. economy, I think intermediate term is not on a good track. And I think if growth is slow and inflation continues next year, that's the end of Biden and the Democrats in 2022. You know? They're probably already, before things get worse economically, already lost. You know, Biden thinks he's going to go around and he's going around trying to pump up this infrastructure bill. Oh, we, you know, this is, what's the word they use? Transformative. This is transformative, right? This is New Deal stuff. I mean, it's not even Great Society stuff. You know, in terms of spending, it doesn't even match what happened under LBJ in the 60s. As a percent of GDP, what happened in the 60s and even in the 70s was almost twice the effect on the economy than the current infrastructure bill. Yeah, almost twice the effect. So the Great Society was, you know, more of a economic impact fiscally than this bill. And it, and of course, the Great Society was not even half of what FDR Roosevelt's New Deal spending was. So they keep, you know, claiming, you know, that heritage, making you think, oh, this is a New Deal kind of a thing. It's not even a Great Society kind of a thing. It's insignificant in terms of a $22 trillion economy, the spending level. won't even budget in terms of spending budget, but budge in terms of move it. It won't budge, but it'll budge the budget. Okay. And inflation will continue. The problem's not the ports. Yeah, that's part of the problem. The supply chain I'm talking about, the global supply chain. Yeah, the ports are a problem. No, but look, the problem supply chain is domestic. You know, it's trucking and it's warehousing. They can't get the workers to come back because they don't pay them enough or other reasons. We got a real trucking problem in this country. Getting the goods moved from the ports to the inland warehouses, from the inland mega warehouses to the company's own regional warehouses, from those regional warehouses to the company's stores. The problem is really transport, rail, and especially trucking. Well, why is it a problem of trucking? Because, you know, we haven't really recruited truck drivers. Why? Well, because their real wages have collapsed by a third in recent decades. Who wants to go into a declining wage industry? Well, now they're worried. Now they're trying to do something about it. But it takes time to train people to drive big trucks. And you better make it lucrative or they're not going to do it. Okay, so, you know, that's the problem. It's a domestic supply chain is more important than the port global supply chain, I would argue, right now. And that takes time. That's why, you know, the supply chain problems and supply problems driving inflation problems are going to continue. And the deficits from these two bills, you know, $346 billion, according to CBO, for infrastructure, and early estimates, $160 billion with the tax hikes. So you take tax hikes out, it'll be even greater for the reconciliation Build Back Better bill. $500 billion over 10 years. Well, that's not such a big deal, really. You know, $50 billion a year in deficit. You know, when our deficits are over $1 trillion a year, $2 trillion, $3 trillion, $50 billion, I mean, that doesn't move the dial, really, on the deficits. But they're going to make a big deal of that. You know, Manchin's are going to make a big deal of that as a way of slowing down or thwarting the entire reconciliation bill, right? Another thing on Manchin, you know, he's like the de facto president, or at least the de facto prime minister in this country, right? He's getting more coverage daily than Joe Biden. You know, which Joe's running the country? The Biden Joe or the Manchin Joe? I think the Manchin Joe. And I'm going to make a prediction here. Joe Manchin is going to run for the Democratic Party nomination in 2024. Watch it. Watch it. Yeah. He's really, you know, the key man for the corporate wing. You know, Biden's 79 years old. You know, three more years, he's 82. You know. He's less than a dynamic leader as it stands, right? And what about Kamala Harris? Who's that? You don't hear anything from her, right? Her career's over. Who's going to run? I think Manchin. Manchin's going to. Think about it. A Manchin sent him a ticket in the Democratic Party. Oh, doesn't that warm your heart? Facing a Trump, and who would be his vice president? A Getz or a Boebert or something, right? Yeah. Oh, that'll be a hell of a race, won't it? Yeah, I wonder if Bernie and the progressives will jump on board and still remain attached to the Democratic Party. I don't think they can do that anymore. Well, you know, this Manchin, he's even running around saying, oh, I'm going to interview these new candidates for the Federal Reserve. You know, I'm going to interview, you know, Jerome Powell and Lyle Brainard. These are the two candidates who run the Federal Reserve. What's he doing interviewing these people? Well, he's acting like the de facto president. That's all. Because The other Joe is doing that at the same time. I wonder if he'll take a position different than Joe. Joe, you know, the Biden Joe, not the Manchin Joe. Okay. Labor news. Well, the John Deere UAW strike is significant. Just settled this week. First time a major contract, 10,000 workers, had no concessions in it, no concession bargaining here. In fact, the union took back some of what it had previously conceded. It had dropped its cost of living adjustment clause. Now that's back in, right? The company had tried to create a third tier for pay for workers. That was defeated. They tried to create a two-tier on the pensions. That was defeated. The workers got a 10% immediate raise plus $8,500 return bonus. So they made up for losses for last year and this year. And then they got cost of living and some moderate raises a couple times and a six-year contract. And a six-year contract, man, that's crazy nowadays. But unions got into that with the concession bargaining over the decades, and they got these long 5-6 year contracts that they get locked into when there's inflation and they don't have COLAs. But anyway, the John Deere was a victory, very clearly, first time, significant. Even more important is what's going on in Teamsters. The Teamsters finally got to vote, direct vote, direct democracy to select their leaders going forward, new leaders, and the reform won. The reform won. The era of Hoffa Jr. is over. And we got the big UPS negotiations in 2023. That will be the big signal whether labor is going to come back or not. The signs are labor is moving, both unorganized workers and unionized workers. And we'll see how far that goes. Right. And then, of course, we got organizing drives at Amazon and Starbucks going on. We'll see how that goes. But workers feel they got some leverage for the first time. And they do with these shortages. I mean, companies are exploiting the shortages and the supply problem by price gouging us. Yeah, well, you can't blame workers for trying to do the same thing to raise and recover their lost wages. But let's watch this labor news thing here going forward. It's pretty significant, I think. But it's more of an intermediate long term as to what actually happens. Important development, though. Important development on the labor front, just as on the inflation and the economy front and the COVID fifth wave front and these phony spending bills, the Infrastructure Act, not paid for, smoke and mirrors, minimal, signed by Biden on Monday, and the phony Build Back Better bill that the House passed that Pelosi damn well knows it's going to be taken apart and if it passes at all. Okay, we'll see what happens with that, but that's not going to be finalized this year, not until early next year where you see any final version of the Build Back Better reconciliation bill. But both of them do not stimulate the economy going into a very questionable 2022. Okay, that's it for today. I'm out of here.